Well, again, my prayer, my wish for a truly blessed Christmas, not just today. Remember, Christmas goes all the way through to the baptism of the Lord. That's the entire Christmas season. So I implore you, leave your lights up, your trees up until then at least. You can even extend it to the presentation, which would be 40 days after today, which is also a custom. But let's let the world know that the light does shine. And that's really the purpose of the Christmas lights, is to tell the world as we turn them on that the light of the world has come. Christmas is the beginning, the visible beginning of God's promise. A promise that he made all the way back at the beginning of salvation history. We all know the story of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve knew only truth. They knew only what was good when God finished his creative work. But along with that, he gave us free will. And so Adam and Eve usurped to themselves what was God's prerogative, and they sinned. And they were removed from the garden of Eden. And so God promised a Savior. In Genesis 3:15, he promised a Savior that he would send one to restore them back to that peace that they had lost. And so Christmas is the beginning of that very thing. When Adam and Eve sinned, when they ate the fruit, it wasn't that they ate the fruit, it's that they disobeyed God. What they did is they, in a sense, took the role of God. And from that time on, all of humanity has, in one form or another, tried to take the role of God in our own lives, whether it be personally or whether it be societally. And so when Jesus entered into our human existence, when God took our human form, he came in a sense to wage war, but not in a bloody way, not in a violent way. In fact, his very weapons of war were quite the opposite of what the world tends to use. Now, the gospel reading for last night, for the night for midnight, is the one that we most associate with Christmas. It's that beautiful and poetic gospel reading from Luke's gospel. In those days, it says, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole world should be enrolled. This was the first enrollment when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And so it goes on and it talks about, of course, Mary and Joseph going to Bethlehem and Mary coming to term in her pregnancy. Caesar represents these false gods, these false kings that we can tend to fall into every time we sin. It is, in fact, us taking that role. So I thought it'd be good to take a look and see what Caesar represents. Now, Caesar was known as a deity back in those days. In fact, he was considered by the pagan people the Messiah, that he was considered the anointed one that would save people from, ultimately, that would give people peace. In fact, he was known as Caesar Christos. That word Christos in Greek is the very word for Christ, which means anointed. So what did Caesar have as king? Well, when he arrived anywhere, he arrived in great fanfare. He would ride on a great war horse. He would be surrounded by protective guards. He was unapproachable, as oftentimes world leaders are. He had these soldiers who themselves had great war horses. He had divisions and divisions of soldiers that would wage war on others. And when he warred, when Caesar would go out to conquer, he warred with the blood of the soldiers, never his own. And does that not sound familiar down through the ages? would you think is the wealthiest man back in those days? It would be Caesar. In fact, the whole world as he knew it, that treasury was at his disposal as it would collect undue taxes from people. Caesar could take, he could have anything that he wanted in the entire world. In fact, on the very coins was his image. Remember when Jesus said, "Bring me the coin"? And they said, he said, "Whose image is on this?" And it was Caesar's. "Give unto Caesar what is Caesar. Give unto God what is God's." Power? He had the world's power. And he used it to conquer, to subjugate people. And the people were subjugated, had to work in order to serve Caesar. Even to the point of feeding him the best of their crops. The best of their food. Caesar could have the most sumptuous foods at a single command. Then arrives Jesus. God himself in human form. How did he come? Without fanfare. In fact, as I think it was C.S. Lewis wrote, that God came so quietly so as to slip behind enemy lines undetected. He came without fanfare. Nobody in the world except the select few that God chose to point it out knew that anything had happened. This humble little girl and her humble young husband, she gave birth to a child, to a helpless infant. Where Caesar resided in a palace, Jesus came to us in a cave. Cold, dark, and not just any old cave, that's what they used as a stable. It stunk. And when he was born, they wrapped him in swaddling clothes. Now, doesn't that sound cute and comfy? But it wasn't. Swaddling clothes doesn't mean a nice, soft comforter. It means that they wrapped him so he couldn't move. It was almost like a precursor to his burial cloth. And then they laid him in a manger, a nice, gentle, soft crib, decorated with little child's decorations. Not at all. You farmers know what a manger is. You put the food in there, and the cows come in, they stick their head through the gate, and they eat. That's where he was laid. In that scene, you see one who is helpless, who is immobilized, and who is living in squalor, comparatively. This little baby would grow up. And there he would begin to wage that war. How? With peace. With love. So much so that he would wage war and never require anybody else to spill their blood. No, he would wage war with his own. His weapon was the cross. You think, well, what in the world kind of weapon is that? Well, in human hands, it has no power, but in God's hands, infinite power. There he shed his blood. There he gave his body. And where the slaves and the subjected under Caesar had to feed Caesar, our king feeds us. With his very body, his blood, his soul, and his divinity. Wealth, power, honor, pleasure. All these can be the false kings of our world today. And God says, no, make me your king. Make me your king because I'm approachable. Make me your king and I am yours and you are mine. So what God do we serve? The God who subjugates or the one who's subjugated for our sake? This is the meaning of Christmas. This is the one who invites us not just today, but tomorrow, and next week, and every day in between, into that beautiful relationship that only a baby could really invite. One that says, yes, I'm your king, but I'm even huggable. What God do we serve? I don't know about you, but I choose this Jesus. This Jesus who says, I am yours if you would be mine.